Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Rising Coaches Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Bender, and today's episode is brought to you in part by Connor Sports. Connor Sports is a world leader in sports services, the official floor of the Final Four and the Olympics. They do everything from high school gyms and rec centers all the way to NBA team floors. If you're interested in getting a new floor today, contact ConnorSports.com for more information. Also, if you're not already a member of the largest coaching tree in basketball, join Rising Coaches today. You can visit risingcoaches.com and it'll help you build genuine relationships with other coaches, have access to amazing content, will allow you to develop your craft, expand your network, and see job opportunities on our member site that are not available anywhere else. For more information, please visit risingcoaches.com. All right, today's special guest, assistant coach at Stony Brook University in New York, Coach Dan Ricard. How are you doing, sir?
Doing awesome, Brian. Thanks for having me on. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, thanks for being here. And give our guests a little bit of a background on yourself and, you know, how you got to where you are and being an assistant coach there at Stony Brook.
Yeah, so I had a great fortune. My father was a basketball coach growing up. He was a high school coach and a junior college coach here in New York, Long Island, and then up in Orange County, New York. And so I've been around the game my whole life. And since I was a little kid, I've been on benches and riding in vans and buses. And so I always knew that I wanted to get into coaching. And I wasn't a terrific player. I was a capable player. And I had the fortune of being able to come to Stony Brook and playing for Nick McCartuck, who was the coach, the first Division I coach we had here at Stony Brook University. And I played for coach. And it was a little unique in that he was going to retire the year after I graduated. So 2004, I graduated. He had been in the business, had won a million games, been a lot of different places. But he was getting to that point where he was ready to retire and start something new. He had built Stony Brook, you know, in 6 years to try to make that transition from Division II to Division I. And when he did that, some of the guys on his staff left. And he didn't want to bring in three new families, right, for 1 year. And so he gave me the opportunity to be on the staff. It was an unbelievable experience for me that first year. I learned a lot from him, really sort of the foundation of what coaching is. And it was a great apprenticeship that first year. He basically said, you can have about $5,000 and do all the work that no one wants to do. But it was really neat and great experience, and had really enjoyed my 1 year with him as the head coach. And then Steve Peichel ended up getting the job at Stony Brook the year after, and I was fortunate enough to stay on as a graduate assistant. And so he let me stay there and did all those GA / director of ops duties for 2 years, you know, received my master's degree here from Stony Brook, as well as, you know, after the bachelor's, and then had a spot on the staff open up, fortunately. So I've been really lucky a couple times that when it was sort of time to move on to something different, there's been a spot open on the staff that was on. And so promoted me to a full-time assistant after that second year. You know, went on a great run, 11 years here with Coach Peichel, and really had sort of come from, you know, worst to first is what we like to say. Like it was a really good build, and it was an awesome experience to see that build from, you know, finishing in the last place his first year to winning a championship in his last year here in 2016. So I was fortunate enough to do that. He then went to Rutgers University, and you guys have seen the job he's done there at Rutgers. Now he's, you know, he's done a great job there. But I went with him for a couple months, and what's unique for me is my wife, who really fortunate to be married to her. That's right. So it's the biggest advice you can give to any young coach is make sure you find the right person to marry. She was an administrator here at Stony Brook, and we had just had our third child. He was 4 months old when we went to the NCAA tournament. And when I left to go to Rutgers, I was there for 2 months, and it was just we had a long kind of conversation as a family, what was best for us. And at the time, our women's coach at Stony Brook, Caroline McCombs, who's now at GW, she offered me the top assistant job on the women's staff. And so, you know, because of that and because of my family dynamic, I ended up coming back to Stony Brook and coached women for 2 years at Stony Brook University, which was an awesome experience. And again, sort of like a build, like my first year, we were in last place. And then my second year, I only stayed 2 years. My second year, we got the third place in the league. And then subsequently, they've won three championships in 4 years. And then she ended up getting the GW job. So she had done a great job. So that was fun. And then I went to NYU for a year. So I was my 1 year away from Stony Brook, but it was in New York. I still lived my house in Port Jeff. I commuted on the train. My wife, a saint, Dagan Nelson, helped me. We worked together at Stony Brook University. So it's amazing what relationships will do for you as you move on in your career. And Dagan and I worked together my first year in coaching. And he got the job at NYU and offered me the position. I thought it was a really unique spot. NYU is a powerful place. It was a lot different than what I was doing at Stony Brook. It was a D3 school. It was a private, it's the largest private school in the country and super high academics. So I thought it'd be a good experience for me to try to venture into that world. And it was a great experience. And then I was able to come back to Stony Brook. Geno Ford, who was on the staff with Jeff Bowles. Jeff Bowles did a great job here as he followed Steve and won a lot of games and was fortunate enough to get the head coaching job at Ohio University. Geno was Jeff's top assistant. And Geno got the job. And because of my time on the women's side, I hadn't known Geno, but because I was on the women's side and he was on the men's side, we developed a pretty good relationship. And when he got the job here, he asked me to come back, and really, really fortunate that he did that. And so 3 years later, working together with a really, you know, really good work relationship. And so it's a very unique story. So 18 years in coaching, 17 years at one place, which is really, as an assistant coach, unique. But work for four different people. So it's a heck of a run.
Yeah. It's not a typical journey that you see, let alone staying at the same place or being able to live in the same house when you coach at different schools. Tell me a little bit about the two spots in between and how that's helped you become like a better coach. So, you know, going from men to women and then back to men, and then also going from Division One to Division Three, then back to D1. What are some things that you learned at those different, you know, on the women's side or at the D3 level that helped you become a better Division One coach?
Yeah, I think I will say this. You always kind of second guess yourself when you make decisions. And I think you you have to go for things, right? I do think that. I think you have to take chances and see how you can develop yourself. I really thought I was comfortable, right? I was really comfortable at Stony Brook. I was comfortable, you know, when I made that move to Rutgers, I was comfortable with Steve. He had done a great job, was really good to me. And I looked at coming back on the women's side, I looked at that as a unique opportunity to develop and grow. And so I was fortunate, and Caroline was great, my boss on the women's side. She really helped me become a better coach in that she gave me a lot more responsibility than I had, you know, with Steve at Rutgers. Well, I felt I had a lot of responsibility. I had different responsibilities, which were, you know, a lot more planning and practice discussions, really having my fingerprints on what we were doing every day in practice. More film responsibilities, really, you know, leading film sessions that, you know, I had done that obviously with on the men's side as well, but in I was able, she allowed me to coach the defense in a way that, you know, I wanted and I thought that I could help her and the women's team. So I was given some responsibilities that I hadn't had. And what that does for you, it made me think like a head coach. It really did. Like every day I was thinking about, okay, what are we going to do in practice tomorrow to be better? What are we going to do? So in the scouting report, as we walk through, to take away what the offense does well. So a myriad of other things, but it really helped me think like a head coach, I thought. And then the other part of it is the relationships. Like, I think women and men are very different. I was talking to a friend of mine in the coaching profession whose father also coached men, and he put it in a good way. He said, you know, women have to feel good to play good, right? And men have to play good to feel good. And I think, the more and more we are that I've gotten into it back on the men's side, I think guys are like that now. I think the men are like that now. I think they have to feel good to play pretty good now. I don't think it's like, you know, in the old days, if I didn't play, I'm in the locker room, I'm sad, even though our team won. I do think guys embrace winning now. But the women certainly were like that. And building those relationships and the trust that you have to have with the women. They're smart people, but they don't trust easy. But I think that certainly helped me develop strategies to build relationships and to continue in my career on the men's side. Certainly in Division III was a different experience. And it was academics, right? Like, we didn't start practice till October 15th. And I wasn't used to that. So I think you know, learning how to quickly ramp up to be ready for the first game was something that was different. So not wasting any time. I think at the Division III level, you don't have time to waste when you start practice. Every minute counts. And it's true for Division I as well. But in Division I, you have the summer and you have spring that you can really develop guys. You know, you have to be ready to develop these guys in Division III level, you know, at starting in October 15th. And your first game comes in 2 weeks, you know, so it happens pretty quickly.
Yeah, that accelerated growth, no matter how it comes, is always unique, especially when you're talking about, you know, that 2-3 weeks to prepare before your first game. Like I ran into that a little bit with the pandemic, that 1 year with COVID. And then also this past year, we had a couple of roster changes in October, and then we played 9 games in 18 days in November. And so your practice time became very limited. And so trying to figure out what's the most important things, keeping them, you know, on the top of your list and being able to get done what you need to get done in an accelerated time kind of makes you a little bit more focused. And you said it too, like Division I, we are fighting for years to try and get more practice time and practice time. But yet you just said we kind of waste it. We don't right. value the time that we have, or we do things that are not always as purposeful. And I think those are valuable lessons that we can learn as coaches, is to take that, you know, manage your time. Your time is your most valuable asset, not only as a coach, but as, you know, your interaction with players, the time on the court with players, just being extremely organized and prepared for what you want to do on a daily basis, I think is very unique. I liked your quote too. You know, I think I agree with you. You know, I haven't coached on the women's side, but, you know, I think a lot of people go with the flow, and human nature is to, hey, you know, what happens next is based on how I feel, when it should be the opposite. And the more leadership stuff that we study is, hey, what happens next can't be based on how you feel. Because if you are just like that, your life will be a roller coaster, and finding ways to not live like this all the time is something that I think is extremely valuable for us as coaches. Yeah,
and I'll say this too, right? We used to talk about that on the women's side all the time. Like, it's not about feelings, it's about principles, right? Because I do think we recognize that, you know, on that side, you know, women wanted to feel good, to play good. I think it was like, and Caroline did a great job of that. And we did, like, it's not about feelings. It's not about what you want. It's not about how you feel. It's about what you believe in and what your principles are. And, you know, and I think that's how you have success, is when the whole unit, the whole organization, you know, can really fight for those principles and beliefs.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So my next question has to do with kind of the transition. So you having been at, you know, different levels, what makes it, you see in a lot of programs now, transition from NAIA to D2 or D2 to Division I, or even like a St. Thomas in Minnesota, D3 to Division I. What is it that makes it possible for one of those programs to have continued success when they're moving up leagues? Because you guys are moving up leagues as well this next year. Like, what is it that helps, you know, transition? How do you flip a roster that has a quote unquote team of low major kids and is moving to mid major kids, or a team of D2 players that are now going to play Division I? How do you kind of balance that roster when you're recruiting and things like that and running your program? What really changes?
Yeah, you know, I think like anything else, it's always about the people, right? And I think you realize that it's not just about the players, it's not just about the coaches, it's about everybody kind of pulling and you know, understanding the vision of what you're looking for. And so, you know, finding the right people is the most important thing. Finding the right people, then getting them to buy into the vision that you have, is the next most important thing. And then I think, you know, holding those people accountable to what that vision is. So, you know, I think that's how you build any strong team in anything that you do. And it can't just be the team members. It has to be the administration. It has to be the university. I think for me, I'll go back to my time with Steve here, Coach Peichel at Stony Brook. You know, people saw the wins and the losses, and we finally won a championship. And if anyone here that's listening followed the Eric East, we had won the league championship 4 times and had fallen short 5 times in the championship game. We had, from 2011 to 2016, our last game, the court was stormed. Whether that was we win the finals, we lose the finals, you know, that's a really high level of pressure to feel. So people see that, but behind the scenes, there was so much more. And the university grew, and the administration grew, and the athletic department grew. And a lot of those changes go hand in hand, whether it was how we lived on campus, what our meal plan was on campus, the community support, right? The campus life, the development of like the fans, right? And all the people in marketing and our sports information and our athletics. So you realize that it's always about the people and who's willing to put in the work to find the vision. And our athletic directors have been great. You know, and that's, you know, you have to have strong leadership. And Coach Pike will talk about all the time, managing up. You always have to manage up. You know, you always have to know what your boss wants, and you have to make sure that you, you know, see what his vision is and work towards that as well. And so I think that's, you know, and everyone would say that. So when you're trying to build your roster, I think you're always looking for the right fit for your school, you know, and I think, you know, we talk about it all the time. No place is perfect. There's never been a perfect place in the history of college basketball. So, you know, you have to find out who wants to be at Stony Brook. Stony Brook's a great place. It really is. And we have a lot of wonderful things here. And I say that all the time to the guys that we recruit. Like, we have a lot of shiny new toys, arena, film room, locker room, you know, academic center, weight room. We have great people here, strength coach, academic advisor, administrative people. But you got to want to be here, right? Because it's not cliche, but anytime there's adversity, if you don't want to be in that situation, you just take off and you leave and you don't fight through it. And we talk about this all the time with our guys. There's nothing ever really, really well will happen in your life if you don't have some sort of adversity to fight through it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, I think adversity is something that we all need. We always don't always want it, or the timing isn't always right.
Right.
But what type of tools and different things, you talk about holding kids accountable and, you know, as a major part for you in adversity, what type of stuff do you guys do within your program or you personally to, you know, help build tools and help young people handle adversity and hold them accountable? And, you know, what type of values and different things do you utilize in your program or yourself personally?
Yeah, I think the first thing is you have to get the guys to believe in you, right? And trust you. That's the first thing. You know, the way to get to anybody, right, is to build that trust. And so, you know, another coaching friend of mine gave me a great quote that I really like, and it says, "You tell me who you are every single day," right? Every single day you go to practice, you tell your players who you are, and every single day they come to practice, they tell you who they are. And so you have to believe them, right? And so I think every interaction you have has to be intentional. It has to be purposeful. You know, you have to tell them the truth. You can't lie. And it's hard because everyone wants to play in the NBA. And so when you tell the guy, like, well, you're not quite that type of player, your defense mechanism comes up. So maybe it's, you know, not that you can't play in the NBA, but okay, that's what you want. Here's how we're going to work to get you there, to put you in a position to get there. And then it's going to be on you to make sure that happens. But you have to set high standards. I think that's the most important thing you can do in any organization to hold guy accountable. You have to set high standards. And when guys aren't meeting that standard, you're communicating. And again, I think it's an everyday thing. You're communicating to, you know, okay, we fall short, and understanding that we're going to fall short, right? We're going to make mistakes. We're not going to be perfect. We're not always going to have bad days. I have bad days, right? You know, and I don't live up to the standards that I've set for myself every single day. And that's okay, but we have to learn from those lessons and keep working and striving to meet those high standards.
Definitely. And it's hard to do. And like you said, you want to live that life that's, you know, you want repeated and replicated and recorded and be okay with it. And modeling the way, I think, is huge for leadership standards. And, you know, I like your quote of, you know, tell me who you are every single day, and you're going to face it. And you can't let, oh, I had a bad day because I had a bad 10 minutes. You know, the day is very long. And again, going back to, hey, what happens next can't be based on how you feel. So, because it could ruin your whole day if you allow it to. And there's a lot of factors that go into it, but I think it's really important. When you, you've mentioned your wife a couple times, and she's on the administration side. What has, you know, with having that in your household and being around it, what have you not been aware of that you feel like you have an advantage now because of having that administrative side in your family, or hearing the other side of, you know, we get caught in our coaching world all the time, and then there's a whole nother world out there with administration. What type of stuff have you learned from that, or from your wife, that you wouldn't know otherwise, or someone like myself that doesn't have that wouldn't know as a coach?
Right. No. She, and my wife started as the academic advisor here at Stony Brook. So she was the, you know, director of student athlete development at when we first, you know, when we met. And she, I shouldn't say this, she's going to kill me now that it's public, but she, I was a senior in college when it was her first year. So, you know, then, and I was tasked with being the liaison to academics. And so we developed a strong relationship. She, you know, whatever, you know, you see the look, so she couldn't resist, but, I she would always say, right, coaches live in coach land. And that was her always her quote, her always what her word was. And she would say, you only see what's good for you. You don't see what's good for maybe the department or for the people that you work with. And so for me, I've really thought about it. And, you know, she reminds me all the time, like, if you are going to drive your, you know, the other members of the staff, the support staff, athletic trainers, if you're going to, you know, academic advisors, the strength coach, if you're going to drive them to the point of exhaustion, all year, all season, summer, spring, you know, there's going to be some negative pushback in those things. So I think it's treating those support staff members as part of the team, right? And giving them, when the season ends, you know, some ability to give you feedback, to understand sort of what, and then listening to that feedback so that you can improve the other areas of the game, not just on the court. And I think I've really taken that to heart. And Gino does a great job of that. Gino Ford, he does an unbelievable job. And it's good to work with him because he really sits down and our athletic trainer and our strength and conditioning coach has a lot of input on how we practice and sort of what our postseason looks like and what our summer looks like. And I think, you know, at first I didn't think about that. You know, the beginning years of my coaching, it was like, well, no, everyone's got to do what's best for men's basketball, right? That's their job. And, you know, you realize it's not that. It's trying to create a community that's going to help and build and help you get to where you want to go.
Yeah, that's really unique to hear those aspects because sometimes, you know, you talk about building a staff and you surround yourself with different people. And sometimes you don't have the choice of who your trainer is or equipment manager or bus driver or all the different other factors that kind of go into it. But it was amazing. When I was a student manager, we had a manager room and it was like an equipment room, but it had all our storage in there and we'd have like random stuff in there. We'd always have a drink fridge. So guys would stop in. It would be amazing how much intel and information you'd find out about what's going on the daily just by hanging around in the manager room. And, you know, same thing with the training room. You go and visit with your trainer once a day or strength coach. You can find out a lot about what's going on in people's lives because they sit there for 25 minutes getting treatment. Of course, they're going to say something. You know, they may have their headphones in, but they're going to talk to you about what's going on in their lives and different things and how they feel, which, you know, again, we have to be able to manage how people feel. But that's pretty unique perspective. And I like, you know, we do live in our own little fantasy world and we only think about one thing. And for 6 months of the year, we don't even know what's going on in the real world. So, you know, it's a crazy business and we get consumed in it. And, you know, it's always good to take a step back and kind of put things in perspective of what we get to do and how fortunate we are. But yet, you know, we have a job to do and we take it very serious and work really hard at it. You know, but there's a lot of other things that may be bigger than basketball or what's going on around you.
No question. And I think the other thing you learn, and she would say it all the time, is like, just because the answer is no, doesn't mean we're not trying to help you. You know, like, you know, you want things and you need things and you're always trying to improve your program. And, you know, when you go and you hear the answer is no, you know, you sometimes say, well, they're not trying to help us. And that's not necessarily the case. You know what I mean? And so I think she did a great job of always trying to figure out how to help us and not say no. But sometimes the answer has to be no. And you got to move on from it and just say, okay, appreciate it. We'll see if we can fix that or change that down the road. But doesn't mean we're not trying to help you.
Yeah, it goes back to that first principle concept. It's not the fact that they're saying no, it's why are they saying no? And getting back to where you want to, you like trying to figure out the exact intricacies that go into the reason why they say no. You having been at a place, I mean, I'm going to say just 18 years because, you know, you basically lived in the same area of the country. You've been fortunate to work for a few different people. However, you being an assistant coach for 18 years, how do you continue to move your needle? How do you continue to prepare to be a head coach one day? How do you fight complacency in essence of you've been doing a lot of the same thing for a long time? What type of stuff do you read? Do you invest in? How do you spend your time, you know, continuing to make yourself better and some of the stuff that you've done and practiced? And tell us a little bit about those experiences as a leader and trying to make yourself better.
For sure. I think, you know, obviously reading has been a big part of what I like to try to do, try to learn new strategies. Social media is great because there's a lot of negative things to social media. You know, you see that sometimes, and you try to give your guys some examples of some negative things. But I do think it creates a community that we never had before. So you can access, you know, different things more easily. And so when you try to, you know, learn different topics, whether it's a leadership skill, which I think everyone now is understanding how important relationships, communication, and leadership are in coaching. And I think people always knew that, but I think it's become more of a forefront now in the last, you know, 10, 15 years. And coaches understand that they have to work on that. I read Urban Meyer's book Above the Line, and, you know, in there is you have to have a leadership system. And I think that for me now is trying to figure out, okay, what is that leadership system, so that if I ever do get a chance to be a head coach, you know, I've always thought about, okay, what's my offensive system going to be? What's my defensive system going to be? How am I going to, you know, play? But I hadn't really put in the thought to what a leadership system might be for our program and how we can improve in that area. And so just reading that book helped, and reading others too. I mean, I really do. On the women's side, when I worked with Caroline, she was a good friend of Josh Metcalf. I don't know if you know Josh at all, but I wrote some books. And one of the books that sort of really shaped my thinking was a book called Burn Your Goals. And in there, I'd always been a goal-driven person, right? I've always been like, let's make goals and let's try to reach these goals every day. And it's sort of a counterintuitive way to think about it. It's like, okay, have big dreams, have huge goals, and we all should have those, but then burn them and talk about what you're going to do every single day to make those, you know, goals happen. So it's not about the goal anymore. It's about, you know, what, as a basketball player, how much time are you going to spend in the gym? What are you going to eat? What time are you going to bed at night? What are you putting in your body? Right. So, you know, you try to do that for your own self as a coach. And so when I look at that, okay, what am I doing every single day to improve me? You know, how am I going to become a better coach, and what those things I have to do to do that? So, you know, I think that's important. And then obviously going to clinics and watching videos and, you know, talking to your coaching friends and seeing new trends and new ideas and new topics and, you know, how you can improve. I do think, you know, coaches sometimes forget you're supposed to be an expert in your field, you know, and so you really have to try to figure out how to be an expert, you know, whether that's offensively, defensively. And so, I take pride in trying to, you know, watch a lot of film, watch a lot of different teams play. And then certainly in the most important thing is recruiting. You know, trying to figure out ways. And I'm talking about reading so much. I just started a new book, Never Split the Difference. It's an FBI. It's an FBI investigate hostage handler who's the top hostage negotiator in the FBI. And so, you know, try to improve my communication skills. How can I improve communication? And, you know, obviously if you're a hostage negotiator, you have to be elite in negotiations and communication. So those are some of the things that I try to do.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think, you know, reading is good. It's, but putting time into practice what you read as well. Like having all the information in the world doesn't really do you as much good if you can't practice it and put it into action. And I think that's really important, and it takes time. And when you're an assistant, you obviously get thrown in 1,000 different directions, and finding time to continue to better yourself is extremely important. You mentioned recruiting a little bit, and obviously you guys are, you're changing, you're going up league. The transfer portal is changing the game. The extra COVID year has changed the game. And you've always been a really good recruiter. And like you talked about, the communication and the connection. With how the expedited process is going, there's kids that are entering the portal right now, and they could be in your program at the end of May, early June. That's like 2-3 months from now, and you don't even know them at all. So how does someone like yourself, as a relationship guy, expedite those relationships? How has recruiting shifted? You know, what are your thoughts on, you know, the best way to navigate this portal? And, you know, myself being a JUCO guy that's placed a lot of players, like, it's been a struggle. It's been a major struggle because, you know, talking with different coaches, they don't even know what they want. So, you know, it's tough. Like, talk to me a little bit about, you know, how you're navigating all the recruiting changes and staying up with the times.
Yeah, I think it is difficult. And for me, you know, I say this, you either adapt or you die, right? So like, if you can't adapt to this new style of recruiting, and it is a challenge for me. You know, we have really good coaches on our staff, and have different unique skill sets in what they do in recruiting. And, you know, I've always been a relationship guy. I say this all the time. I've had two girlfriends in my whole life, and I married one of them. You know what I mean? So like, I'm not a person that really can, you know, that was into these expedited speed dating type of relationships and recruiting. But, you know, I think you have to evaluate that and say, this is the new world we live in. And so, you know, you try to get as much background information on these guys as you can. You talk to as many people as you can surrounding the guys you're looking to recruit, and you try to be as honest as possible. I think we, you know, at Stony Brook, we did a, you know, we've had both ways. Like, we lost a lot of guys in the transfer portal 2 years ago, and we added some really good players in the transfer portal last year. And so I think, you know, we've learned a lot of lessons along the way, making sure you get the right people, making sure you get the right fit. How does everyone fit in together on your team? Are you taking just the very best players you can get? Or are you taking guys that sort of fit a style and a system that you play in? So I think it's not necessarily that it's there's any one right way to do it, but you have to sort of figure out who you are, mostly head coaches, right? But as a staff, who you are and who you want to be. And so for me, it's been in this, and I've challenged myself this spring. I really have. And the portal is just starting to get going a little bit. You know, a lot of names have been in the last couple of days. But I challenged myself to try to look at it in a new way and try to really embrace, you know, what this is. And I don't think you can forget about the junior college guys. You can't forget about the high school guys either. I think there's really good value in recruiting high school and junior college guys as well. But you can't just look at it and say, oh, I don't want a portal guy, or, oh, I'm only going to do the portal. I think you have to have a well-rounded sort of view of what that looks like.
Yeah. Balance your roster in numerous ways. And, you know, everyone wants to get old and stay old, but sometimes there's some value in continuing to develop some program guys, and they may work out in your favor if you do it the way they used to.
Yeah, and I do think, Brian, like, you can turn a roster around pretty quickly now. Like, you know, as we go from the American East, which was a great league, which was an awesome league, which was really good for us, to a new league in the state, maybe it's a couple, you know, it's a little bit, you know, higher level player. You can flip your roster pretty quickly, but I also think, and Gino has done a good job with this. We've tried to recruit players that have higher ceilings, so that can develop. Like, we're not like getting finished products at Stony Brook, and you're not getting finished products at Stony Brook in the CAA either. You still have to find those guys that, you know, maybe have some potential to grow. And I do think the guys in our program are really good players that can continue to grow. And so now we have to add some depth around them to get to that, you know, level where now you can really be really competitive in the CAA too.
Yeah, makes sense for sure. Makes sense. Looking back at kind of your coaching journey or anything that you would, you know, advise, we are a Rising Coaches podcast, and, you know, we kind of get plagued to saying, oh, it's development guys, managers, GAs, video operations, first assistant jobs. But, you know, we're a lot bigger than that too. You know, we're starting a search firm. We've done some different things on the basketball landscape that have kind of changed the game or continuing to grow as a company. Is there anything that you would say, or any question that I haven't asked that I should have, to you, or some advice that you would give, you know, different coaches and different things?
Well, I would say, I mean, Rising Coaches, it's a little scary. I feel like I'm on the decline. You know, you say 18 years, you know, I was rising about 10 years ago. But I do think that, you know, you're never too old to learn new things, right? You're never too old to try to enhance. We talked about that a little bit. How do we get better every day? So I do think you have to be open to learning something and open-minded in learning things that maybe you're not comfortable with doing. And starting in the business, my story is a little bit unique. I was extremely lucky. I think taking advantage of the opportunities that you have, right? Like, so there's always an opportunity. You got to look for it. It might not look like there's an opportunity, but there's always somewhere where you can do more. So if you're a GA and you want a little bit more responsibility, you have to figure out what that is, and become as valuable as you possibly can to the people. When I was a director of ops, I was a GA. I always felt like I worked for everyone on the staff, not just the head coach. So whatever the assistant coaches needed, I was willing to do whatever I had to do so that I could, you know, learn, number one, try to learn as much as I possibly could, but also number two, you know, one day they were able to move on, they could help me in my journey as well. And so I try to provide as much value as possible with those people. So I think that's really, really important, you know, and understanding that every role has a lot of value. You know, you don't have to be the head coach to be valuable to a program. You know, you can be assistant, GA, ops, you know, volunteer, and have a big value to the program, and do that to the best of your ability.
Yeah, no job is too big or too little. And I always appreciate that, being a guy that quote unquote started on the bottom, like literally 18 years old, freshman manager, was filming practices, set up the water every day and wipe up the floor when someone fell down. So, you know, it's interesting to see the growth and different things as you go along with it. But like you said, just keep working, find value, find ways to be helpful, solve problems. You know, I think that's.
And you never know, like Brian, like you never know, you know, when your opportunity is. We talked about like telling people who you are every day, and just like a small story. When I was on the women's side, the male practice players, that's very common on the women's side. You have, you know, male practice players. One of our guys was awesome, and he was really dedicated. And this is a great story, right? Like, he was a male practice player who was dedicated to the team, and he was the only guy that was here during the Christmas break. Like, you know, semester ended, the other four or five guys, they went home. Anthony stayed and really showed his dedication to the team. And so I'm out recruiting in April, and a position and Missy Traverse, who's the head coach at West Point now, she was at Adelphi at the time. And Missy said, you know, I'm looking for a guy to be a GA. You have anybody that you know that you like? And I said, Missy, you should absolutely talk to my guy, Anthony. He was awesome. Talk to Caroline about him. You know, you see. So she talks to Caroline, he becomes a GA at Adelphi the next year, and now he's with her as a full-time assistant at West Point. And so you never know when that opportunity is going to come for you. And so what you do every day really, really matters. And so do things to the best of your ability every single day is what I would say.
Yeah, that's awesome. With you being a guy that's continuing to learn and better themselves, you know, what lesson has taken you the longest to learn? Is there something that you can think back, like, that just taking you a really long time to grasp or believe in or really trying to like invest in that you maybe didn't believe when you were younger?
Yeah, I don't know if there's anything that it took me a long time to learn. I really think I have some pretty good self-awareness. I think for me, I'm trying to sort of change the way I approach recruiting, right? I talked about that a little bit before, like trying to be more social, for lack of a better word, try to reach out to more people, even if I'm not, you know, recruiting a kid from your team, reaching out to you and just checking in, because, you know, sometimes you get in this mode where you're only going to talk to the coaches that you recruit a kid. And you get him to Stony Brook, and then you never talk to him again for the next 5 or 6 years. And then he has another kid. You call him again, and it's like, well, bro, you haven't talked to me in 6 years. Why am I going to help you? So I think for me, it's really trying to set aside time to connect with people that have helped you in recruiting or continue to develop relationships with other people in recruiting. So it's not a lesson that I didn't know, but it was more of like being more intentional about keeping the relationships that you have really strong and not just taking those for granted.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't delete text messages. So mm-hmm. You know, I'll go back and I can use myself as a poor example. It's like, oh, I went to reach out to someone and I looked at it. I haven't talked to the guy since 2019. Like, that's not good for me to have a transactional relationship. It has right. to be a little bit more authentic, but it does take time. Relationships take a lot of time in establishing trust and you know, but in our business, sometimes it is extremely transactional because we have to get things done quick. We're feeling pressure from different directions. And that's one thing that I feel like Rising Coaches has been really good to me. You know, our CEO, our little family of, you know, leadership with Brandon Rosenthal, Andy Farrell, Adam Gordon have had that authentic relationship. And it's gotten stronger now that I work within the organization a little bit more. These people really do genuinely have our back. And that's one thing that Rising Coaches has provided. A lot of young people is, you know, the relationships behind the business. And, you know, sometimes we just get so caught up in, hey, we got to win, we got to do this, I'm too busy, when it's a people business. And we can't forget those things as we continue to coach. And, you know, it's not just your players, but the fraternity that we live in. And, you know, I was talking to somebody yesterday, and I was asking him, would you be interested in that job? He's like, right now, I need to be a better husband. Like, I moved my wife across the country and I took care of the house and I took care of all these different details that go into what I thought would be important for her. Oh, I got the house set up. I moved everything. I took everything out. And then I went recruiting for 2 months. And he's like, I didn't think about the support network that she had at our previous home. I didn't think about, you know, my kids' daycare. I didn't think about some other things that kind of go into it. And we just get so caught up in it that we got to remember those things and what we really value and is important in our profession.
Oh, absolutely.
So as we kind of conclude here, is there anything else that you want to talk about or anything you want to get off your mind or, you know, anything along those lines that you would like to say?
No, I think this has been really good. And I think that, you know, as you talk about Rising Coach, we talked a little bit about some advice, but just, you know, like I said, I think it's really important to just value every role that you have and continue to make yourself as valuable as possible to the people that you work with and you work around. And the more things, you know, it's a small fraternity. Everyone's one phone call away. So, you know, you have to be true and you have to be authentic, and, you know, you're going to get, if you're looking for a new job or you're trying to move on, there's five or six people like, oh yeah, I know him. Oh, I know him. And they'll give you their opinion. So just to do your best to provide as much value as you possibly can to the people that you're around every day.
Yep. Last question for you. You know, what's the best thing that can happen in your life right now? So you're a grateful guy. You're a guy that's continuing to learn. What's the best thing in your life that can happen right now?
Some commitments, right? Trying to get some of these guys that we've been recruiting to say yes. I mean, that would take a lot of weight off my shoulders. But, you know, I that's interesting. I think, you know, I think, again, it's cliche maybe and corny, but just kind of being where your feet are, right? I think that's really – you know, I think a lot of times as assistants, and at this time of year specifically, as jobs open up and there's more opportunity, like you're always like, oh, what's next? What can I be? Where can I go? And I think, you know, be here, do the best job you can. And so for me, I think it's kind of taking a deep breath and look and see where I am, spend time with my family. My kids are awesome. I got three kids. They're huge basketball fans now. My little guy's 9, he turns 10. I'm taking him to the Final Four for the first time. His birthday's on the Saturday of the Final Four. You know, that's going to be enjoyable experience. My wife's coming down with him. And so, you know, going to a couple of his games, I went to his game. The first game I've been to, was this past Saturday. So we weren't allowed to play in our conference tournament this year. So it was a big, like, you know, it was a big disappointment for our guys, but the silver lining is that it was the day of our championship game. And if we'd gotten the championship game, I wouldn't be able to go see my son play at all, cause it was the last game of the season. So, that was fun. And, being there, you know, helped my wife too, to be able to balance sort of that work life situation. So, I'd say that just kind of being here and spending time with my family and you know, loving that.
Definitely be present. That's the key. Every single day, just be present, be where your feet are, and things will work out in your favor if you continue to, you know, invest where you are and invest in yourself. So I appreciate your time today and, look forward to visiting here in the future, but, you know, again, appreciate your time and being on and sharing your words of wisdom.
Awesome, Brian. Thanks for having me, my man.